NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, a portrait of Sandra Cisneros. Sandra Cisneros really doesn't need an introduction. And that's because her classic coming-of-age novel, The House on Mango Street, has sold over 6 million copies, is taught in most U.S. elementary schools, and has been translated into over 20 languages. The book has turned this Chicago native into a household name. With a writing career that spans over 40 years, Sandra is one of the most renowned Mexican-American authors of our generation. Her latest published work is a bilingual chapbook titled Puro Amor, where Sandra captures a moment in the lives of Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera in La Casa Azul. She writes about Frida's love of her animals, and throughout the pages, in a first for the author, Sandra Cisneros includes her own illustrations of her own beloved animals. In February, Sandra Cisneros joined me for a live conversation at the National Museum of Mexican Art in the city of Chicago. The conversation was part of WBEZ's podcast Passport series in partnership with Bocalo Radio. In front of a live and enthusiastic audience, Sandra shared details about what she thinks makes a home, her current life in Mexico, and what she hopes will be her legacy in the years to come. Here, live, is Sandra Cisneros. Welcome to our live taping of Latino USA right here at the National Museum of Mexican Art in Chicago, in front of a live audience. Hello! It's not by chance that Sandra's most famous work is A House on Mango Street, and then her house in San Antonio is a very important part of your life, an extraordinary part of your life. But you come upon a time, Sandra, when you wanted a change. And there was something that was calling you to Mexico. And I want to know, what was that was calling you to Mexico? And when you were saying, you know, I'm thinking I might move to Mexico, what was the reaction that you were getting from people?
Well, first you have to understand that when we move, it's many factors. It's not that you just go there and say, oh, I want to live here. My roots in San Antonio dried up. And it's not that I wanted to live in San Antonio. I found a job there, and I found that there were a lot of musicians and painters and creative people that live there because of low overhead. And so that's a great place to live, especially if you're making your living, as I was, as a migrant professor. You know, I'd go to California and teach for a semester, then I'd go to New Mexico and teach for a semester, and I'd go to Michigan and teach for a semester. And the money would stretch a little bit longer if I spent it in South Texas. Rent was cheaper. You know, $200 a month I paid for decades. And so that's why I lived there. But after I had been there for a long time, my life changed. I started winning awards. I started foundations. Well, the people I used to hang around with, the painters and writers and creative people, we all kind of grew up and went different ways. I especially enjoyed the gay community in San Antonio, the Latino gay community. So much fun and very creative. And you have to have a state of joy to create art. Isn't that so? You can't be in some place where you're worried about how am I going to pay the rent. You have to be in some playful spirit. And we had a community like that, but we grew apart. Some of us went to New York, and some of us moved away, and some of us moved into drugs, and some of us, you know, died. So my roots dried. And then I went to San Miguel to do a lecture. I would not be living in San Miguel if I had not had some spirits wake me up in the middle of the night and had a paranormal experience.
Can you tell us about?
Yes, I've written about it. You know, I'm not the kind of person that wakes up in the middle of the night for nothing. If I wake up in the middle of the night, it's I'm thirsty, I have to go to the bathroom or something, but I don't just wake up. And I was wide awake at about 4 in the morning and just wide awake, and I turned the light on and I thought, what's going on? Is it this town? Maybe I'm supposed to be writing, or perhaps I should meditate. I never get up at this hour. Maybe I should meditate. But before I could do anything, I got a mental message, and I don't pretend I know who it was from. I don't know if it was the abuelos, if it was the guardians, if it was San Miguel, the patron saint of San Miguel. But it was a mental message, and it was not in English, and it was not in Spanish. It just said, you are not your house. We were trying to establish my house as a place for writers to come and, you know, live there and finish manuscripts. That was my idea. And the idea of suddenly walking away from San Antonio, that I wasn't my house, that I was put on the planet to be a writer, not to be an arts administrator, that was like a bucket of cold water. And it woke me up. And the first thing I thought is, I'm going to leave. And with that came this joy, so I knew it was the right thing to do.
Not everybody thought it was a smart idea for you to move to Mexico.
Well, it didn't tell me move to Mexico. That's what friends reminded me. It just said, you are not your house. And I thought, oh, yeah. Okay, well, I like being here, so I'm going to rent a house. But I know my time in Texas is ended. I just realized I think I'm supposed to be here. I don't know if I'm supposed to be there forever, but I know I was supposed to be there.
So I'm incredibly lucky because soon after you moved to Mexico, you started inviting me.
Yes.
I feel so blessed to have spent a night, two nights, or three, in your beautiful house. And when I was talking to my producer, actually, about my image of you in San Miguel de Allende, is I said, you know, my time with Sandra in San Miguel, it was when we were walking in the streets, I felt like you were floating through the streets of San Miguel. Just floating through the streets, whether it was the plaza or walking in front of the mercado. But that's kind of, you know, like a dreamy kind of image. It was a moment. It was a, when you think of your life in San Miguel now, what do you think of? And does it feel like home?
You know, one of the things I learned moving to Mexico is that it doesn't matter where you live, when you're an artist or if you're Chicano, you're always going to feel displaced. It doesn't matter where. And that you have to find home inside yourself. But that displacement is good. It's good. I think as artists, we need to feel a little bit apart from society, that we are watching everybody and we don't quite fit in, because it's that discomfort that forces us to create art. So I'm in San Miguel and I see my life as I'm walking there, kind of like a film, but I also understand that I'm not of that region. My ancestors, my maternal grandparents are from Guanajuato. They're from a little pueblito outside of León, and I have roots there, but I'm not quite Mexican, and I'm not quite of the United States. And that ability to move between the Mexican and the expat community is very good, because it allows me to view each and to connect communities and to connect them globally too. So I feel that that's our job.
So, Sandra, your house in San Miguel, it feels like a museum. Will it be a museum?
Oh, I hope not.
You don't want it to be a museum?
No. I don't like what's happened. Like when you go in Frida's house, you know, it feels very dead. You know, it's just dusty. There's something dead about it. I don't like how that feels. You know, when you go in a house, it should smell like cilantro and cebolla and fried tortillas. You know, like somebody's living there and making caldo. And when you go into Frida's house, there's something just kind of tomb-like that I don't enjoy. So I wouldn't want my house to be a museum. But if it became like something that wasn't mine, it should serve other artists. You know, too many people have two houses, especially in San Miguel. People have two, three houses, you know, one in Aspen and one in Canada and one in San Miguel. Why can't they let artists be their night watchmen? Yeah, come and, well, you know, make sure you screen them so they're not having parties or anything. But serious artists want to write or want to paint and want to create. And we can't do that when we're not in a state of security and joy. So I think that there should be a program that, you know, you should adopt an artist, you know? And, you know, then you go away and you put your poet there, and then the poet finishes their work and they say, this book was finished at, and they put their Medici's name there. You know, don't you think? That would be really nice. Then you wouldn't have to, like, pay for somebody to watch your property. There'd be somebody making
art.
So
it's like artist Airbnb barter.
Yeah, yeah. I think it would be, don't you think that's a good idea? Right.
So that just means,
you know,
that
I have to tell you, people have loaned me their house, and I noted it in my books You know, and whenever I'm in someone's house, I finish a work and I always write that person's name and the acknowledgments, name it. And some people, that's the only way they're going to get in a book. Right? Right?
So, when I was in your house, everything was so beautiful, Sandra. And I wondered about the care that you put into your houses. And then, you know, we think about the house on Mango Street. What is it around you and the houses and the care that you put and the time that you put?
Well, you know, for me, a house is important because it's my office. You know, in this house, I don't have an office. I work on the dining room table.
Because there's like a little table right in the middle of the dining room.
Well, there's the dining room table, plus there's a little kitchen table, a table with a pop opener, a little red table that's in the living room.
So and that's where you write.
Yes.
Like in the middle of everywhere, not secluded.
Well, I had an office that was secluded, but my animals couldn't be with me because the cats lived in the office and the dogs lived in the house, and they were always fighting, so I couldn't have them together. But I missed the dogs, so I said, oh, this time I won't have cats and I won't have an office because cats are very territorial, and dogs are must generous, you know. So the dogs now stay with me, and they help me write. I have a little bed underneath for Juan, and my little Sholo, Naui, she sleeps under my t-shirt or my sweater. I just cover her up. She's here all the time. And it's really nice to have a dog here, one over here.
So, well, Sandra, you brought up your little pets, your animals. So little Naui, who is a Sholo Chihuahua, so this big with a little bit of hair, like all gray, medio con los
color
ojitos
así.
Color of
a huitlacoche mushroom.
Es?
She's the color of huitlacoche, the corn mushroom.
Exactly. And you, Sandra, were with Naui literally on your chest.
Yeah, she looks like Frida's monkey. So she's like this always on it. Yeah.
And she's under your clothes.
Yes.
And the other names of your dogs are?
Luz, Osvaldo, y La Cacahuata.
And then there was...
Oh, Chavela Vargas. Chavela Vargas was just there temporarily. She moved on.
Chavela was there the day I arrived. She kind of had a little bit of a heart attack running around. And then Chavela went to stay with your caretaker.
It was like having a gazelle in the house. And my house is small, so she went to spend the night at Ernesto's house and never came back because she liked it there better.
She liked it there. Your perritos love you so much, Sandra. They follow you everywhere. You talk to them. You kiss them. You carry them. And, you know, being there with your perritos, you know, was just an extraordinary experience for me because they were sharing their love, too. They were very friendly. But can you tell us what your relationship to your animalitos, what does that bring for you? What does it bring to your heart?
I feel sorry for people who don't have a relationship with animals because it's like people who don't have a relationship with flowers. You know, when people say, oh, I don't like dogs. That's the same thing as saying, well, I don't like trees. Or I can't stand clouds. It's the same thing. All things in the universe, whether it's rock or a fire or wind or a dog or azalea, they're all giving light. They're giving love and are nourishing you, whether you're paying attention or not. So if you're looking for love, go sit under a tree. Yes, sit under a tree. It doesn't cost you anything. You feel so much better after you've been next to a tree, right? Pick the oldest one when you're confused and get some advice. You know what? Rinse your face with the wind, and then you feel so much better. All these things in the universe, rocks, they teach us so much about endurance, mountains, about standing firm. Animals are puro amor. You know, they just met you, and they're happy to see you. Imagine people were like that, not non-discriminatory, just like, oh, I'm so happy to see you. I never met you before, but you're great. You know, that's so lovely about animals, you know? If you just like switch them and they know too when you're sending them light. For me, it's like, you know, if I'm feeling badly, I just need to be near these things. And they all emit light, just like us. They're not any less and not any more than we are.
Coming up on Latino USA, my conversation with Sandra Cisneros continues. Stay with us. No te vayas.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from HBO, presenting the new comedy series Los Espookies. Executive produced by Lorne Michaels of Saturday Night Live and Fred Armisen, Los Espookies is a primarily Spanish-language series that follows a group of friends who turn their love for horror into a peculiar business, providing horror for those who need it. Starring Julio Torres, Ana Fábrega, and Fred Armisen, catch Los Espookies, premiering Friday, June 14th at 11 p.m. on HBO. Support also comes from Babbel. Have you always wanted to speak a new language? Whether it's for travel, work, or brain training, Babbel's 10 to 15 minute lessons will get you speaking confidently in your new language. Choose from Spanish, French, and more. You'll learn through real-life dialogues, speech recognition, and interactive trainers. And Babbel's spaced repetition method actually makes you remember what you've learned. Download the app or go to Babbel, Babbel.com, to try Babbel for free.
Mitch McConnell has become a champion for conservatives. But back in the day, he once got support from groups like labor unions.
I mark it down as one of the worst things I've ever done in my life.
So you thought about it over the years?
Oh, I still think about it. Every time I see his face.
Mitch McConnell, a new series from Embedded. Subscribe now.
We're back, and we're going to continue now with my conversation with Sandra Cisneros, recorded live at the National Museum of Mexican Art in Chicago in front of a live audience.
So your most recent work, Puro Amor, when I saw it, Sandra, I was like, oh my God, Sandra wrote a book about her dogs. Ay, qué lindo, Sandra even drew her little dogs. But the book is not about your dogs, actually. The book is a snapshot of a story of a moment in the life of Diego and Frida in La Casa Azul. And it's so interesting because, you know, Sandra, I was just at the Casa Azul, which is overwhelmed by tourists. Like, the lines are so long. And, you know, seeing Frida with all the photographs of all of her animalitos, why did you decide to write this?
You never know what you're writing or thinking until you create a piece of art. Then you find out. It's like if, you know, the piece of art is an answer and you don't know the question. The question comes after you get the answer. It's a reverse. And when you're a professional writer, you don't write when you feel like it. You just go to work and you try to light a match and catch a flame. And I remember looking at a postcard, the one where Frida's with one of her cholos, and she's in bed and the cholo's next to her pillow. And right on top of that beautiful embroidered starched pillow was the big ugly dog. And I thought, what is that about? And I looked at it and I looked at it and I looked at it. I know what that's about. And that's how the story began. But I didn't know my dogs were going to come into the story. I did not know that my sorrow was going to come into it. All the things that came into it, I just followed from a feeling that I got. And the feeling took me to this story, which I immediately, after a couple of days of writing it, said, thought it was a failed story. And I put it away for several years, and I brought it back out and said, oh, it's not failed.
Guys, what do you think about the fact that you have Sandra Cisneros who writes something and says, meh, failed story, I'm just going to put it in a drawer?
Well, you know, I have very high standards. I think as writers, as artists, we shouldn't do the same book. You know, every book we create, every art we create should be better than the last one. And the difference between a good book and an excellent one is time.
So, Sandra, would you mind just reading this little segment right here? And remember, this is a story about Diego and Frida and their animals.
The truth was that the mister had always been dishonest, not with his feelings, but with his heart. He would be the first to tell you how honest he was about his dishonesties. He was like a chronic bedwetter. He could not control himself. He would always be a bedwetter, even if he were not given a drop to drink. He had no wish to overcome this weakness, a big overgrown child indulging in whatever he saw, his eyes bigger than his pajarito. And so Mrs. de Rivera surrounded herself with animals. For what could be better than creatures when one has been betrayed? What finer emblem of loyalty and steadfastness and pure love? Puro amor y amor puro. That's what each pet gave her, pure and clean, pure love and only love. Who wouldn't want that? You know, it's there for free. And I never can walk past a lost animal. To me, it's the same like walking past a lost child. I have to pick up that cat, even though it was...
I mean, it actually happened, you guys.
Yeah,
like we were really walking.
It was crying.
Down the main street in San Miguel de Allende on our way to go to be on stage. Crying.
Yes.
You guys know how hard it is to pick up a crying cat on the street.
It's like picking up a crying baby.
But Sandra picked it up. And then she was like, I'll see you in a minute, Maria. And I'm like, I don't know where I'm going. She's like, I'll be right back. I know somebody who might be able to take the kitten for a minute.
And I found it a home.
And she found it a
less home. Less than 4 hours, yeah, in like 2.5.
Sandra, when I first met you, it was the early 1990s. I was a correspondent for NPR, and I was doing a story about multiculturalism because it was really scandalous, this thing called multiculturalism. What I remember, and I don't even know if you know this, but do you remember the definition you gave me of multiculturalism?
Yes, but I'd like to hear you say it.
Multiculturalism is being able to see yourself in the person most unlike you. And I love that. I fell in love with that. And it's really kind of guided me, actually. I've used that a lot in my life and as a journalist. And it turns out, Sandra, you know, you've actually given me a lot of advice over the years. I remember when I came back now and we were friends and I was getting ready to write, I think, and we talked about writing, and you said, do you remember what you said about the kitchen, pajamas?
That you have to imagine you're wearing your pajamas. And whatever voice you use when you're wearing your pajamas and talking to one person who could see you in your pajamas, that's your real voice. That's your first draft. Because you're not afraid to speak to that person. It's only when you're conscious of who's going to read or who's going to listen, that's when you stammer. So you have to put yourself in that frame of mind of feeling absolutely safe.
When we were talking, I think it was over breakfast the first morning that I woke up in your place. We were talking about our schedules. We were talking about that we spend a lot of time on the road. We were talking about the ways in which we measure the time that we're away. How do you measure the time that you're away, Sandra?
I count how many beds. Like, it's an 8-bed trip. That's a hard one. And you're usually getting up like 6 in the morning, dragging all your suitcases from your room down to the lobby, and then getting him into the car, and then getting him in the car into the little carrito, then pushing that carrito, and it's like the Circus Cisneros. My glamorous life. Yes. That's the hard part for me.
When we were talking about this kind of, it can be lonely, but also, you know, there's a lot of expectation for someone like you. You're called an icon. And you were saying that one of the things that you're doing now with your time, and I found it so beautiful, Sandra, is that you said that you are actually very intentionally giving back. So what does that look like?
Oh, well, in Mexico, I think that looks like being very mindful and paying attention to people that come your way. You know, there's lots of people that have great need in Mexico, anywhere. You know, those little moments that someone says, caridad, and no one talks to them. So you look them in the eye and you say, Doñita, ¿cómo estás? Oh, pues me duele mi espalda. You know, those, I'll give you a whole list. But you talk and you make contact. And, you know, maybe you buy them bread or you give them a little bit of money. But you, most important is just treating people like human beings. I think that's something we could all do. And it's just about, you know, making eye contact. And I say hi to everybody. When I walk down the street in Mexico, I say it in Spanish, whether they say
I've witnessed
hi or
this. She does. She yeah. literally walks down. Yeah. Buenos dias, ¿cómo le va? And she'll speak to people.
Yeah, but, you know, I think we should do that because I don't, you know, I know in Chicago we don't because we're afraid. We just think like someone's going to kill us, you know, maybe somebody that don't make eye contact. And I don't like that. So I always try to say hello to people. They say hello to me sometimes, but when they don't, they missed out on meeting me. You know, so that's the way I look at it.
So what is the project that you're working on, and why is it that you want to make this work that you're doing, hearing other people's stories?
Well, you know, someone asked me if I was writing about the undocumented, and I gave an answer I didn't like. I said something like, oh, I can't write that story, I don't know it. Even if my heart is there, I don't know it. Then I thought, no, that's not a good answer. Why don't you know it? And I thought, oh, that's a good one. I need to get out of the house more often. So usually when I go out of the house, I'm the author, but I'm not the writer. That's different. I'm split in two, like the two Fridas. There's me, the author, and me, the writer. And the writer needed to go out. And so I thought, well, maybe it's time to listen. And I'm just going to ask people who know someone, because I can't just go up to someone. They have to know someone, a mutual person that they trust, and see if they will allow me to tape them. So I've been doing that all of last year and some of this year. I just came back from North Carolina, where I came back 6 months to the same region where I had recorded. I'm taking these recordings now and editing them, and I hope to have a script, a chorus of voices that perhaps could be performed. I don't want it to just be on the page. I want it to be something on the stage. It could be adapted to song or to performance in some way.
You talk now about the tragedy, the sorrow, deportation, families being ripped apart. This is a very challenging time for anybody who's an immigrant, who's Latinx, who's Mexican, who's a journalist or a writer or an artist. It's a challenging time. So what do you do when you need to find hope? What do you do, and where do you find it? How do you bring it in?
I read poetry. I think the poets are so necessary in this time. The poets are doing the most difficult work. I read poetry because poetry lifts me up. It gives me direction. It gives me power. It gives me ánimo. And more than anything, poetry is what we need. Because what is the oficio, the profession of poets, but to tell the truth? And we're living in a time of such lies. So we need the poets right now.
Sandra Cisneros, thank you so much for joining us in Chicago for this live show at the National Museum of Mexican Art. Thank you so much for sharing your voice with me, your corazón, your work. We're so thankful for everything that you've done, Sandra Cisneros.
Thank you, Maria.
Sandra Cisneros is an award-winning Mexican-American author from Chicago. Her latest published work is titled Puro Amor. This interview was recorded at the National Museum of Mexican Art in Chicago as part of WBEZ's podcast Passport series in partnership with Bocalo Radio. This episode was produced by Janice Yamoca and edited by Sofia Palizacá. The Latino USA team includes Fernanda Camarena, Miguel Macias, Antonia Cerejido, Maggie Freeling, and Sayer Quevedo, with additional editing by Marlon Bishop. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau and Julia Caruso. Our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow is Jess Alvarenga. Our interns are Lucas Southard and Jonathan Cabral. And for this episode, special thanks to our production manager, Natalia Fidelholz, for producing the event, to our digital editor, Amanda Alcantara, to Tyler Green, Simon Tran, Izzy Smith, and the rest of the WBEZ events team, to
to Silvia Rivera and Team Vocalo, to Carlos Tortolero and his team at the National Museum of Mexican Art. And finally, a big thank you to WBEZ recording engineer Colin Ashmi Bobbitt. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. Hasta la próxima. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. The Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. And Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at hsfoundation.org.
So we're gonna have a live conversation.
But can we talk about Barbie?
I'm Maria Hinojosa, and next time on Latino USA, a young activist from Texas and her mission to provide reproductive health care to asylum seekers on the border. That's next time on Latino USA.